Welcome to Conversations with Nikki with your host, Nikki Sabarini.
Well, welcome to Conversations with Nikki. I'm Nikki Sabarini, and it really is a privilege to be with you. Thank you very, very much for tuning in. I'd like to welcome our syndication partner listeners. That's Radio Today in Johannesburg, Eldo's FM in Johannesburg, Bay FM in PE, MC 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Knysna FM, Wild Coast FM in East London, Timmining Stereo 89.1, that's in the Northern Cape, and Cowie FM in Port Alfred. And this is the show where we keep you entertained, informed, and inspired. And thank you very much for sending those ongoing emails. I love, love, love to hear from you. Please continue to visit the website, www.conversationswithnikki.co.za. Conversations with Nikki, one word, Nikki spelled N-I-K-I. And as I always remind you, all the shows are there. So you may have some time, and you may not have much to do, and you can listen to some shows that we've done over the past 2 years, and hopefully you'll get lots of interesting conversations and information as well. So I was very, very lucky when I worked at another radio station to be sent a book. And of course, when I read the book, I just found it illuminating and I found it inspiring. And it was just wonderfully entertaining at the same time. And this book was and is called Unedited, written by none other than Jane Raffaele. And we all know Jane Raffaele only too well as the bringing Cosmopolitan to South Africa, working with Fair Lady for many years and really a tour de force. What an incredibly inspiring human being. So I so loved reading the book, and I loved it even more having in the studio and just finding out more about this extraordinary life that she has lived. So you must know how excited I am where there is a double treat where I don't only have mother, but I have daughter as well to talk about their relationship, talk about being a South African businesswoman, mothers, lovers, and respected in the boardroom as well. So I am so delighted to have Jane Raffaele in the studio with us and her daughter Julia Raffaele. So welcome, ladies, and thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thanks, Nikki.
It's really lovely to have you. And Jane, so it was two and a half years ago?
About 2.5, I think.
And I'm interested to know, because when I spoke to you, the book had just been launched and you were giving a lot of interviews. What happened after that? What transpired in terms of people having a greater insight into you and your life? Did things change for you?
Yes. I'm laughing, actually. A lot more people come up to me. Not that they don't anyway. But these were really, really funny encounters. One woman ran up to me in the airport and she said, "A lot of women can say they've read your book and they know you, but I'm the only one who can say I know what you said about Stockport was true because I've been there." Mm-hmm. And a man also stopped me, also traveling, and he said that he opened the book as the plane took off in Johannesburg and he closed it only when the plane landed in New York.
Really?
Mm. And I thought, to hold, you know, a man's attention with basically an extremely feminine story is quite unusual.
Well, you see, we have perceptions about people, don't we? So people see the Jane Raffaele of today and the Jane Raffaele, as I said, editor and starting magazines and this powerhouse. But you started off as a young girl in England, struggling through the war and really having to work very hard. I mean, I'll never forget the story of how you kept warm and all of these stories. And what it does is it unites people in the realization that we're all incredibly connected and that people work very hard to get to where they are. Sometimes we just see people in a particularly successful position and we think, well, that's where they've always been. And that's when the story becomes inspiring.
Well, I had the most amazing role model in the world, and I'm not going to say my mother, though she was amazing. I'm going to say Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill?
Well,
oh,
because
yes.
He never stopped saying, never, ever give up. Mm. So those were the words that, from being a small child, they came over on the radio. He was doing it to keep the people of England and Scotland and Ireland and Wales going on. So that was my nursery rhyme coming from this voice in the box, because nobody had television in those days. And people talked about him. So I think that was what was drummed into me. And funnily enough, I think it's what keeps South Africa going too. Mm. I think that is what people here say to each other, hear each other saying. It's what they believe in, and it's what they do. And that's why this place is unsinkable. I read this morning that some survey said that South Africa was among some of the most gloomy, depressed, unhappy countries in the world. And they released this finding, and immediately South Africans started coming back to them saying, oh, no, we're not.
No, we're not.
So it made a wonderful story. I hope it's gone viral. Mm. You know, I'm sure I can see you're nodding.
It's wonderful. Solomon, yes. Well, before we started the show, we were talking about load shedding because this has become a reality. And Julia, you were saying, you know, we've just got to find a way around it. And do you think it'll go on forever? And we were starting to think about a life. And you gave the example of the frog in the boiling, in the water that warms up slowly. How does that work? If you can just explain that concept, because...
Well, I think that one should never get used to something. One should always be looking for a better way to do things. And unfortunately, it's just human nature that people do adjust to a certain situation. So my view is that it will get better. And I think South Africans are naturally optimistic, entrepreneurial. We innovative thinkers, and we find a way around things. So, and I've always found that because we work a lot with our partners overseas, Hearst International, and... I know when I talk to other people from other parts of the world, they were impressed with South Africans. You know, we do stand out for the way that we get around things. Mm. There's always a way. So with load shedding, we're going to have to find a way around it. And I am hopeful and praying that it doesn't carry on because it is difficult from a business point of view.
But look how optimistic you are about it. And you are the daughter of Jane. And Jane was saying in this exact same conversation, you were saying, well, there's nothing else we can do. This is how it is. And we'll find a way. And if we go back to the book and you've spoken about who inspired you, you grew up in a time when there was a war, when millions of people were being killed around you, fathers, brothers, sons, were being sent off, some never ever to return. You had to really be concerned about keeping warm, where your next plate of food was going to come from, whether the Germans were going to attack you. What, you know, real issues, and that is what you lived with. You were inspired by Winston Churchill, and this is what you have brought with you to this country. So when there is something like load shedding, I don't know, Julia, and this is passed on to you, this is just an issue that you learn to deal with.
Mm.
And that's life.
It's just a stone in the path, and you step over.
A stone in the path. I love that, Jane.
So it will be an inconvenience, but it's not going to stop us. And when you look at what's going on in the world now, today, I'm almost frightened to turn on the television because of the ghastly images. You know, that are, and I wonder about children, what they think when they see this. And they do see it, and they will internalize it. And I think that it's very important for the media, people like you and people like us, to tell children that bad things happen, but you don't necessarily have to give in to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we can make them believe that, and then they will cope. And they will find solutions. In fact, I think that the younger generations are the greatest hope that the world has at the moment.
But they're changing, aren't they? They're so different.
They need to change.
They're speaking a different language, and that's...
We haven't done it right.
Mm. Mm.
They've got to find the way.
So Julia, you... I mean, you've always had a working mom. You've always had a mom... who was out there and achieving great things. And yet, with that, Jane, you still had a family. Your family, your children were still very, very important to you. And you have a very strong sense of what's right and wrong. You're just talking about our youth and bringing up children. Do you think, Julia, that having a mother working so hard, that it was difficult to have these kind of conversations with her or get this kind of input? Or was it just something that happened in a very harmonious, organic sort of way?
I think, having had children now myself, you know, you realize how important your role models are and how children absorb, you know, whether consciously or unconsciously, the example that you set for them. And our example as kids was, you know, we had working parents. We had parents who were always interested in the world and what was going on and, you know, were playing a constructive part in the economy. And it was perfectly normal. And when I look at, like, some of the traumatic experiences that other people I know have had as families, you know, and I look at my own childhood and I really am grateful that we never had, touch wood, but, you know, we were incredibly lucky. You know, our parents are still together and they had four children and now they've got seven grandchildren and we all live in the same country and we all live in Cape Town, which is also an unusual South African story. So, you know, I don't remember in my childhood anything traumatic. I just remember being very happy and stimulated and, you know, encouraged to have an opinion, which obviously isn't always good around the dinner table because it can get rather noisy. And, you know, we have all been brought up to have an opinion and to be quite conscientious, hardworking individuals. No bunking of school was allowed. Unfortunately, we just put in a hard day's work. So that was our role model. And when you grow up like that, that's the norm. So for me, I've always worked. I've always loved what I did. It was a passion. And I saw that in my mother, and it still is today. Mm-hmm. You know, her biggest hobby is her work. Mm-hmm. It's not a job for her. So for her, she enjoys being part of a community and being able to contribute and connecting people and looking for opportunities and just being very constructive in a society. And so I just think I was very lucky. And I think the older you get, I am not a millennial, unfortunately, but the more grateful you become in a good way and, you know, make the most of your opportunities that you have. Mm.
So role model, we come back to that word, the importance of role model. Did you know, was your mom strict?
Not really. She tried to be, but she was too busy to be strict. She did chase us down the corridor with a riding crop once, you know, it didn't really work. So, the thing is that she was always busy and she traveled and, you know, we did joke with her about making appointments with her secretary to see her and we came to the office and, you know, saw what she did. But she wasn't really strict, not that I can remember. We were given quite a lot of latitude.
So who helped you with your homework, for example? Who helped you with things like that?
My father helped me with my times tables, which wasn't very nice because he is quite a strong personality.
I also give it to my husband. Who wants to do times table?
Yeah,
horrible.
Exactly. And maths isn't my particularly good strong point. But anyway, it's not his fault. My mother, as we all do who are working women, had a good infrastructure around her. We all matriculated and went to university. So I can't even remember who helped me with my homework, except my father trying to teach me the times table.
Mm. I think that probably the most important thing I did for them as children was what my mother did for me.
Yes.
And that was to teach them to love books and love reading.
Mm.
I almost
feel sad when you're saying that because we're living
books.
In a world, sorry, Jane, where it's just there's so many other stimulations. I love to hear that. That's the basic, isn't it?
Yes, but that's books are building blocks for life.
They are.
And even though we've got so many other ways and places to get information, when you're reading a book, you're doing it in a different frame of mind. And it has a different effect on you.
Mm.
And that is not just my opinion. That's the discovered and found result of research into it. So I think that obviously you pass on what has been given to you. That was what was given to me. And I grew up in a society where even the poorest of the poor, and we were, had access to books. There were free libraries in every town in England.
So it gave you access to another world.
Yes, and other minds and other countries and other civilizations. And by the time I got to high school, I knew the history of my own country and many other countries in Europe because I had read about it. So what the teachers chose to teach us was just extra. And, you know, one of the great hopes in the world today is self-teaching for children. One of the things that I'm very interested in is this sort of granny cloud of ex-teachers who are teaching children in India and South America. And they don't need to speak the languages because this wonderful new invention does the language end for them. And the children are given access to computers and they go and find the knowledge themselves. And I mean, this is one of the reasons I'm not really worried about the world. And I say that the hope of the future lives in the children. When I had children, I did make one big mistake. I didn't spend enough time with them alone, one-on-one. Because they were born in three successive years, the girls, and then the boy came along several years later. I treated them like triplets. And one of the problems was that I had another child, and that was called a fair lady. And a year after that child was born, which happened to be in the same year that Vanessa was born, that child, fair lady, reproduced itself and went fortnightly. It was born as a monthly, and a year later it changed into a fortnightly. So then there were quintuplets. And, but I was so fortunate. It's not that I was such a special person, I can tell you that. To be in this country where there are wonderful women who provide a network of support for working mothers. And as long as you pay them properly and respect them and treat them like the colleague that they are, in this co-responsibility. It is a good relationship for the children. I learned that from anthropologists, who all of whom told me that long before it was relevant for me, but that was what I got at university, that a child who grows up in a good tribe is stronger than a child that grows up in a one-on-one relationship with its mother. And so many childcare experts were saying, you must be with your child at all times. Rubbish. Your child will be stronger, brighter, more outgoing, and more used to you if they have a good circle around them. And I also could work the hours that suited me. So when they were little, they don't remember this now, but I remember it. That's the important thing. I didn't have to be in the office at 8:30 in the morning. I went in at 11 and I came back 3 or 4, depending. And we had that time together before they went to sleep. And we had that time together after they got up. And I worked through the lunch hour and I scheduled all my meetings in those times. And I did all the paperwork at home. It was paperwork then. And so I did that at home, but not as long as they were awake. I had to wait till they went to sleep.
Sleep, and then you did it. I mean, juggling, that is phenomenal. That's you pushing yourself on every level. And Julie, when you hear
that
this,
it doesn't feel like pushing.
Oh, but well, I mean,
you know
I
why?
Hear that. I mean,
but you
I
know
feel,
why?
Yes.
Because I was fortunate. I was put in a position where I was in control. From the first moment I started with Fair Lady, I could control things. That's what women need to cope. It's not to be given something. Just put the women in a position where they are in control and they will organize things. so that they can combine their multiple responsibilities.
But I think also important is the psychology behind it, and a mother being okay and feeling that she can still be a mother. She can still be the heart and the anchor and be herself as well. How many mothers completely lose themselves in the mothering of children, and because they feel they have to in order to be a good mother. And so I think the psychology of knowing that they can still be there, but be that other person as well. And you've just said, and the child coping with that.
Look, you don't get away from the thing that all mothers suffer from, and that is that they want their children to be happy all the time, which is impossible.
Mm.
And mothers will continue to castigate themselves and not anybody else. You know, if the child isn't happy, the mother automatically assumes it's her fault that the child isn't happy. Mm. And I wish that somebody would come along who could teach women to say, just stand back, don't be so controlling, don't be so all-enveloping. It's not all about you.
Mm.
The child is an individual.
Mm.
That's again why I think that one of the things that will help women to increasingly take control of their circumstances will be allowing their children to take control of their circumstances.
Wow. I'm learning. I should be taking notes. Julia, let me ask you, because, well, you are a working mother, and you've told me off air that you have four children. Sure. I mean, what is it with the Rafaeli women and four children? Can't you just one, two? I mean, how do you deal with four children?
Well, I only manage two, and then I have two beautiful stepchildren.
But still.
So, you know, I can't claim 100% for them, but they are very much obviously part of our lives. And, you know, I think it is a juggle. And I think it's like you belong to a group of people women who work, and people understand, and you can't beat yourself up about it. You're not going to be perfect. You know, I mean, the other day I had a meeting with someone, and they wanted to meet after hours at 5:30. And I said, you know, the only place I can meet you is the Spur. Sorry. You either come to the meeting at the Spur. I don't have help, and I've got to take the kids to the Spur. And my three-year-old twins, you can imagine, at the Spur, which obviously is perfect for them, and for working mothers. That's where we had our meeting. Mm. So, you know, you continue to do what you want to do and what you have to do, but you do feel guilty, and you do not always achieve the perfect balance,
yeah,
because it's impossible. It's, you know, running and dropping and picking up and checking in and trying to manage, like, you know, the logistics of working and having kids. But we all do it because it's what we want to do. And I think if you are a strong person, and you've got healthy self-esteem, and you give your kids healthy self-esteem, and you do things for the right reasons, then that's what they absorb. I mean, my kids are in aftercare, not every day till 5 o'clock. Some people are horrified, you know. They think at 3 years old they should be at home, or you should be playing with them, or taking them to the aquarium. I do make sure they go to the aquarium, but they seem to be flourishing, and I think you can do everything right and still come up against a number of problems. But you can just go in the direction and, you know, give your children the basics. Those are more important, a strong, solid foundation.
But you see, it's far more acceptable these days. I mean, Jane, you were a trailblazer. I mean, that you were doing what a lot of women were not doing in that time. So I'm sure you must have come up against quite a bit of criticism.
You know, when we started Cosmopolitan, oh yes, criticism. From other mothers, you mean?
Mm.
That bloody school gate.
Where is she? Where is she? Who is she?
Yes. No, they had plenty of access to me. They used it. I used to say to them, well, you know, the mother does the night shift, and that's the most important. So I just had one line, and that was it. But it didn't mean that I didn't go away thinking, maybe she's right.
Mm. Okay, so it did sit with you. I mean, it was there.
But when we started Cosmopolitan after the 19 years of Fair Lady, I came into contact with a large group of women who I'd never been in touch with Fair Lady, because they didn't feel that Fair Lady spoke to them. And these were single mothers. And they were working women like myself.
Mm.
And I became so concerned at this flood of letters that was coming in that I ran a workshop with a very, very good psychologist for these women. And sitting in the workshop, I realized it was for me as well. And basically, she spent the whole day working with them. Her closing words were, if you can go home after this day and walk in through your front door and greet your children with the absolute confidence of someone who has done the best thing for yourself and them that you could have done this day, then everything will fall into place.
Mm.
And
that feels good.
They all took it away, and I took it away too. So that was a lesson another woman taught me. And because, well, being an editor is a bit like being a lion tamer. And you go into that cage with the lions and you have to get them to sit on their stools. And you don't even have a chair or a whip. You only have your voice. And I think that having children, you know, is, some people describe it as herding cats, but I think it's like lion taming, actually.
I like that. I like that comparison very much. I suppose one of the fundamental differences, though, is that, Julia, you never have switch off. Jane, you spoke about coming home, working around when your kids were sleeping, paperwork, the good old days when we actually used paper. Today, the technology means that you can't ever switch off. So, Julia, even if your kids are now awake, or if I'm using your mom's example, and you go, okay, this is my time to spend with them. And I wonder how many moms listening now who can relate to what I'm saying, how much of that is quality time? How much of that is spent with our iPads? We're quickly sending an email, then our phone, there's that funny little bleep noise, and we look down and another email or WhatsApp or a pic, whatever it is. So we're on demand. And you know, the switch off is just not there anymore. I mean, Julia, how do you cope with that?
Less sleep. More stress. I mean, it's all not necessarily good at all, because you also see your kids flipping through your own phone and, you know, using technology from such a young, early age. And look, I mean, nobody's perfect, but we are conscious. I think that's one thing about being an older mother. When you have kids, you are a lot more conscious about the experience because you're older. You're also probably more tired. But I think, you know, that is one of the biggest challenges that everyone has these days, because, you know, one feels one must always be accessible, always be available, answering everyone immediately, you know. But if you kind of change your mindset that, you know, you'll answer your emails at a certain time, or it's about managing your time, and you'll try and instill some kind of discipline into your life, then you won't always be checking your phone, and you will actually appreciate when you put your phone somewhere else, and you do spend time with your kids. But I don't think anyone in the business today, because of the rate of change and you know, how quickly we all have to be learning, you know, at any age, if you're in business today, you've got to be learning about all these new platforms. You've got to be learning about which one works for your business. You've also got to be using the platforms yourself, because if you don't use these different platforms, you won't understand what the consumer's experience with the platform is. So it's, you know, it's about accessing all this incredible information which is coming to you, filtering it through your own business needs, and then, you know, making an assessment about which one is best for your business, and then being quick enough and agile enough to change direction if it's not working. And nobody has the answer, which is the good news. So that's the exciting part. Lots of opportunity to test. But at the same time, I do worry about stress in our lives and how, you know, people are supposedly growing older, but also there's a lot more sickness, which is related to stress. And that definitely is related to technology. So we do need to find a way to manage it cleverly, that we can stay on top of trends and information, and also be able to switch off. which I'm probably not that good at, and I probably learned that from my mother.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of us, there is this addiction as well. We're being stimulated all the time, and the hormones are being secreted, an actual physiological thing. We're all kind of addicted to this frenetic pace. But we're going to take a break, because after the break, I want to talk about this technology and how that's changed the world of magazines, of publishing, and how does one stay on top of one's game in this new arena. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Make your next event unforgettable with a host from the production house. You've heard Conversations with Nikki. Now you can book Nikki and a range of other celebrated interviewers to have conversations at your next event. Whether it's a seminar, corporate event, or fundraiser, our host will help you get the story out of celebrities, company management, award winners, or internal achievers. To delight, indulge, or entertain your audience, book Nikki or one of our other great hosts, speakers, and MCs. Contact the production house on info@pxhouse.co.za. Welcome to Conversations with Nikki with your host, Nikki Sabarini.
Well, welcome. This is Conversations with Nikki. Lovely, lovely to be with you. I'm Nikki Sabarini. This is the show where we keep you entertained, informed, and inspired. And welcome to our syndication partner listeners. That's you, Radio Today Johannesburg, Eldos FM in Johannesburg, Bay FM in PE, MC 90.3 FM in Plettenberg Bay, Knysna FM, Wild Coast FM in East London, Timmining Stereo 89.1 in the Northern Cape, and Kawi FM in Port Alfred. And I have two lovely guests today. We're talking about all sorts of things. We're talking about the world. We're talking about being mothers. We're talking about being businesswomen, technology, and managing in this very interesting world in which we live today. I have Jane Raffaele and I have Julia Raffaele in the studio, and I hope that you are enjoying the conversation. And Julia, just before the break, we spoke about this lack of switch off, this inability to, although we have to manage it, to just disconnect from the world and be completely present in that moment. And you know, Jane, when you were working on Fair Lady and you said with Cosmopolitan it was changing for the single working moms, but you had one particular media. You knew that you were dealing with magazines and it was print, and you were looking at your advertising and getting the right stories that were relevant. We live in a completely different world today. We still go and we still have magazines, but of course everything is digital. And everything is electronic, and things are changing so very quickly. So how is it for you, first of all, Jane, seeing this world change so rapidly, from where you've been and what you've started to what's happening today?
It's exciting.
You see, there's your wonderful attitude again. I see frightening, you see exciting.
I love new things. And that was always my working philosophy. Find out what is new and give it to the readers. Share it with them. And find out before anyone else does. So I think that's one of the things, you know, that drives me. But I love what's happened to radio, particularly radio in this country. I think that that radio is almost driving the opposition better than the opposition is. Mm. Because of the greater reach and the daily, hourly, you know, minute by minute, live contact with the human voice. And to me, the human voice is the equal of a book. Mm. So that's a big compliment. Mm. So one of the wonderful things that Julia, you know, has been doing with the business is creating new partnerships. She can tell you more about that. But our natural partners and are the people on radio, because we seem to share the same intentions. Mm. And you've got to do it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and all through the year. Hmm. We're dancing to that drumbeat ourselves now, online. Not just with one brand or product, but with multiples. So we're beginning to become even more like radio people, I think. And to me, that it isn't a threat, it's a challenge, and it's a very exciting,
exciting challenge.
And I still absorb a lot of print, really good print, from all over the world. But I don't always absorb it on paper. And that, for me, is, well, it's like just giving me more chocolate. You know, giving me extra hours in the day to eat more chocolate or something. It's a wonderful, wonderful, and it doesn't feel like an overdose. You become more selective, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And you have to be more current, but that's also not a bad thing.
Challenging is the word.
Yes.
Yes. So, Julia, because it is, it's a completely different world. I mean, just Jane, just as you were saying it, what came to mind was before you were limited by the magazines that were on the stand. There's no limit. This is the age of information. We were talking about education a while ago, and before, the it's almost as if the teachers were the gatekeepers and they were the holders of the power, but they are no longer that, and because these students have access to everything. And the same goes in your business, because people can go online and they can have access to any publication, really. And how do you deal with that, and how do you access all these platforms in such a way that you are still relevant, and that you are still interesting, and that you are still current?
Well, I think there are not many businesses that have the unique opportunity that we do now to shift our business model. You know, in the past, we only did have one platform, and we had a product that expired after a month,
right.
And we had, you know, and we didn't control our route to market because we don't do our own distribution. Now we have multiple platforms. We have, I mean, just in our business, 51 events that we do, which is a separate part of our business. We have different revenue streams, and you do have to really do that successfully and implement it successfully. You have to change the mindset of the people that work inside your business. You have to support them with training. You also have to, you know, shift your deadlines, shift revenue, shift your cost base. So I think that, you know, from a business point of view, I mean, it really is an amazing time in our life cycle of our particular business in terms of publishing, the publishing world. But to do that, I think in the long run successfully, it will help if you can be quite agile. So in our business, we really focused in on the female market, and we made sure that the products were all, you know, glossy, upmarket, aspirational, you know, international brands. So even if it's House and Leisure, it's an international brand because it can stand anywhere on the international market. And we've got to we've focused in on that particular mindset and stages of a woman's life for a particular reason. So we can be quite agile, and we 150 people, we in Cape Town, we Joburg, we've got a very dynamic culture. But at the same time, it's not quite as easy as it sounds, obviously. And you do have to be very resilient, and fail your failures fast, and not let the concept of failure become anything other than an intelligent failure versus, you know, a negative experience, and keeping people's morale up and just allowing them to understand that everyone in the world is testing. They're testing the market, they're testing platforms. Start to have fun with it, because it's allowing you multiple opportunities that we never had before when we were in a single platform business. So, you know, I think for me, it's about kind of leading that by example. And as, you know, my mom said, and I call her Jane in the business, so as not to unnerve anyone in a meeting. But as, you know, she said, it's exciting if you are authentically a positive, optimistic person. Of course, it's challenging. But if you're working with other people who feel the same, that's really essential. I think to make up your workforce, a combination of millennials who are going to be by 2017, 75% of the workforce. That's a fact. So you need to be working with attracting and retaining millennials who think differently, work differently, act differently, and combine that with experienced professionals who are a bit, wise because they've been in the business for 20 years, and combine those two strengths with an agile business and a passion for learning and an opportunistic kind of energy where, as Jane said, we can make new partnerships. We can form e-commerce partnerships. We can we can move ourselves out of a almost trapped very limited options situation in terms of remodeling your business model into a completely new world where it's anyone's game. And I always remember one thing, sorry, but this is like, I often say this because this is how the role model of my particular mother has influenced me. I remember having a conversation with her, and we were just talking about, different people selling businesses and retiring, and for her, retirement is a dirty word. And the reason is because she started our business, which is Associated Media Publishing, when she was 45. I'm 48. I have to be honest about my age and be upfront. I mean, so I think about what she did only 3 years ago from where I am now. And I often tell that to a lot of women that I speak to women, men, anyone, because it just makes you realize that if she could build a business, which is now 32 years old, an established, incredible business and an opportunity for us now, when she was 3 years younger than where I am now, then I think to myself, what can I do? And that's a great role model to give your kids.
Yes, Jane.
One word that Julia used, agile. I love that word.
Me too.
But something popped into my mind when she said it, and that was something that I had a recent discussion with all our editors. And we were discussing, among other things, what the greatest challenge they found in their lives at the moment, in their working lives. And they basically came back to time. They said that they have to produce daily what they used to produce in a magazine monthly. And they have to do what we call refreshing it all the time. And basically, we don't work with huge teams. I mean, 150 is not nothing. But if you knew what those 150 people were busy doing every day, you would probably say, how on earth do they do it?
Except, well, how many magazines is that?
Well, we've got five. We've got four monthlies, and then we've got quite a few annuals that we do, and also brand extensions.
I mean, that's the 150.
Yeah.
Yes.
But we've got websites, we've got social media.
Good Housekeeping is also, we have an Afrikaans version of Good Housekeeping that advances their deadline by a week. In a magazine's life, that is perhaps the most annoying thing you can do to magazine people, because they already have terrible deadlines to deal with. And I said, well, what would you like us to do? And they said, could you put some more time in the day?
Oh no.
And then one of the editors said,
get that.
Clone Mimi. Mimi happens to be a very, very, very productive online content generator.
Clone Mimi.
But she's on Cosmo.
I think it comes also down to, we're all learning how to manage information as it comes to us. But I know on Cosmo, they meet every morning for an hour and they just speak about digital. And anybody in their team, whether it's an art director or a beauty editor or the online producer, creates content for online. And I think that's also part of the learning process is, understanding that content for radio is different, how it's packaged, how it's curated, how it's edited, how it's presented. It's different for a digital platform, like an online platform to a social media platform. So I think once we are more familiar with it, we'll also realize, like newsletters, for example, you can get more people on board, or you can just start packaging and creating the content for your newsletters in a different way. And I think the one massive, brilliant thing about the world today in business is we can measure what we do. So our teams are learning to understand, what does this all mean? What does an open rate mean? You know, because it's not just about sending information out into the universe. It's about, do people open a newsletter?
And now you know, if they do or
you
not.
You can read that quickly and you can change your behavior and your, you know, your action. So I think, you know, that's part of the learning, is it's part of understanding that the world doesn't go, in our world, according to a 3-week or 4-week deadline, send the magazine to the printer and take a half day, because we can't anymore. Mm. I mean, now it's like, you know, okay, well, we finished that, what's next? Mm. Or how are we leveraging every single thing we do? If we're running 51 events, you know, and we are selling tickets to those events, you know, are people coming back for our events or not? Do they want to hear about our events? You know, what do they feel about our events? People can speak to you, your readers, who used to communicate with us via mail. They now tell us on Hello Peter if they don't like something. Mm-hmm. And we are, which is fantastic, tasked with actually changing something they didn't like, or responding or explaining. So you've got so many more opportunities to communicate with your very important consumers on a daily basis. Mm. But I do think it's taken a bit of time for us to shift, because we were working in a completely different way. So people do create massive content with very little teams. Mm. We actually have got quite, I think, because I compare it to the overseas, you know, partners that we speak to all the time, we have got a good solid structure. But at the same time, like, it's what is this one person doing in that structure and how can they do it differently? And that requires a lot of thought and a lot of conversation between us and the people who are working for us, because they're the people on the ground that understand what it takes to put together that brand proposition. Mm. Every single day they're thinking about, they're immersed in it, and as a business you've got to understand how to support them to be able to do what they do best.
But if you were, you were to look at the mastheads on international magazine brands, and I think it, the same would apply to their online staff lists, we do this with so much fewer people in South Africa.
How come?
We've always worked with fewer people.
Well, we do have a reputation in America, being hard workers. I don't know if that's true or not.
No, I mean, it can fill a whole page. If you look at American Vogue, you'll see that there is one whole page of American Vogue that's nothing but the people who work on it editorially. Mm-hmm. And then there's another whole page of the people who work on the business side of it. And they've had to squeeze now to start bringing in the online. Mm. Any minute there'll be another whole page of that. Mm. We have a quarter of a column. That's the difference. A quarter of a column.
Julia's saying she's not sure she agrees with you. Oh, we're going to see a disagreement between mother and daughter.
No. Somewhere we'll come to happy compromise. But, you know, when I speak to people in Czechoslovakia...
You're the mother, Jane. You can tell her. It's what I said.
Yeah. I think, you know, comparing us to the US is very different, because, you know, obviously it's a massive market there. But I do think that South Africans make a plan, and we don't have deep pockets. And at the end of the day, when I talk, as I said, to our partners in Czechoslovakia, on Marie Claire, and the Ukraine, and other European countries, they work with very small teams. Because the thing is that, as you know, I mean, people are bloggers who are creating content. Yeah, yeah. One person, and they are obviously trying to monetize that content, and they are trying to create content. So, you know, I think this is a period of testing, learning. You know, we've put in a lot of new positions that we never had before. Mm. And when I go around to the agencies in Joburg, like I have over the last few days, they're in exactly the same situation. So that's the good thing. Or I speak to our First for Women partners, or, you know, they're like struggling with exactly the same issues. What does this role now mean, you know, in a business, inside a structure? What does this person have to do now? It's changed. Mm. So, you know, you don't just do what you did traditionally. Now, sorry, you are expected to do a whole lot more. But that's the world. The world's changed, and you've got to keep up with it.
You have to be innovative, because we talk about the technology. If you just look at apps, how many new apps are coming out, and this is affecting you all the time. It's affecting all of us and all the way we do business. So adapting to change is just something that, and knowing that your model is just going to be, it's continually evolving.
Yeah. the one good thing is that there are three components for agile learning, and women feature very highly because we used to not having a lot of information and not having a lot we can control, and also emotional intelligence is another thing that. So it's quite interesting because they did a study which I read recently that women are very agile learners. So in a period of incredible transformation and transition and challenge and newness, women are quite well equipped, I think, to move forward in this period of change. And that's always good to know because we have a lot of women in our business.
You've got a lot of women. Well, that is good to know.
But, you know, that's brought another word into the situation, sexless, because the thing about communicating online is that you don't know unless they choose to let you know the sex of the person who you are talking to. And that's opened up a new kind of conversation between people and people, not just women to women, men to men. It's people to people. And by the same token, you don't know the age of the person who you're communicating with. And this is something that we need to think about, because
ever changing,
and we will. And this is one of the things that's going to bring about change in the world. And there's a chap, his name is Sutra, surname. He's in Newcastle in England. He's an educationist. He pioneered the hole in the wall in a slum in India, where he put a computer in a hole in the wall and turned it on and then sat back and watched what happened. The children found the computer, thought of it as a toy, and taught themselves how to use it. All he had to do was to adjust the language.
That's incredible.
That has grown.
And it says everything.
So when you think about talking to those people, their teachers have learned, their actual teachers of those children learned that what the children thought was work was not what they were doing on the computer. It was what they did in class when the teacher spoke and they had to listen. That was work.
That was work. Julia, you were going to say something.
No, just out of interest, we did a survey on Cosmo last year, a millennial survey. And because Cosmo's always spoken to the young, fun, fearless female, but now it's become crystallized into a bullseye of the millennial, anyone between 18 and 34. And, you know, it's interesting that at this particular type of person, out of the responses that we got 34,000 open-ended responses, which means that this new millennial wants to speak to you and share her thoughts with you as a brand, and they are totally open about the way they feel. And it's not a multiple choice question, an open-ended response. They're like sharing their diaries with you.
They want to engage.
They want to engage. They want you to know how they feel. I mean, how amazing for a business and a brand and for people who work on that business to be able to be guided. Because at the end of the day, I do think there's a hell of a lot of noise out there and clutter. And especially in the women's magazine market, there's a lot of competition. It's one of the most competitive sectors of the market. So I think if you have a brand where people want to belong to that tribe, and every time they engage with you at any point along their journey, whether it is, you know, through the printed product, through social media or online or wherever it is, there's a thank you that they get from actually engaging with you. And it will come down to basics, because if you look at any successful platform, why do people use Facebook as a platform? It's about themselves and showing how they're feeling, how they're thinking,
heard,
attitudes. It's a platform for them and for everybody else to either, you know, collaborate or corroborate or get involved or support them. And the more likes people have, the more they use it, because the more thank yous they're getting for actually taking part in that platform. So I think that, you know, once we understand the world a little bit and what's available to us, and of course that's changing, you know, every 5 seconds. I don't know if you've heard of something called the world after midnight, but it's really a concept of in the past, we used to be able to learn, refine our business skills, and do our jobs really well after we've been in the business for quite a long time. But now, by the time you go to sleep and the time you wake up in the morning, which is the world after midnight, the world's changed already.
Isn't that so true?
You know, so much that, I mean, it's almost impossible to keep up with the pace of learning with the rate of change. Mm. But at the end of the day, you know, it's all fun and everybody's, part of it. So get on the bus
and go for the ride. I just wonder where it's going to go, but that's projecting. I have to ask you, Jane, because when we chatted last time, we spoke about O Magazine, and I suppose this is also about a lot of the shifts and transformations that are happening with the Associated Media Publishing. You brought O Magazine to South Africa. You met with Oprah Winfrey. It was the first time the edition had come to, I think, out of America was the first time.
Mm.
Right,
and
you bought it the only time. I mean, it was incredible, and O Magazine had a huge following. And yet, when did the publication stop? Was it last year or the year before?
Last year. That was a co-publication. We did that with Hearst, and they've got a very hard and strict view of the world. They, if something's not working, then they terminate.
No place for shifting, transforming, moving, changing.
Well, not in this instance.
Mm.
And left to ourselves, we might have, as we are doing, carried on.
Mm.
So, and we, I might tell you, we were the ones that had to break the news to Oprah. And she was very supportive, actually. She wrote a most wonderful letter to the editor that I think was one of the, things that really helped her.
Mm.
Because it is heartbreaking.
Of course it's
heartbreaking. To close a magazine and to close a good magazine. And I think that one of the problems was when Oprah stopped her television show. It, as long as that was there, there were more women coming from that towards the magazine because they felt they were her friends.
Mm.
And that she was reaching, she has the greatest gift in the world. When she's talking to you, you think, or talk, and you're part of a huge audience, you think she's speaking to you.
Mm.
And every woman in the audience thinks that. So, that was sort of taken away. And I don't, blame her in the slightest. She's a creative person. She has to grow. And that means she has to change. And she has persisted. And she's got her network right now. And so own network.
Yes.
And she's doing a great job, as she always does. And what really pleased me was that she can make time to make really good films while she's doing all of this.
Boy, is
yes,
she doing
is
that.
Doing
mm.
that. So I'm happy for her, but I wasn't happy for the editor and the staff, and I thought they'd done an excellent
phenomenal job.
Yes.
A fantastic job. And for you, it must have been very sad as well.
Very sad. It's not the only time that this has happened. After we took on Marie Claire, we struggled with Femina.
Mm.
And in the end, Julia made a very good tactical decision and she sold it to another publishing house. If they had kept it as it was, it would have filled a gap in their lineup. They didn't. They changed it. So they couldn't make it work and then they closed it. So I was just as sad when they closed it as if we had.
Mm. Is that hard for you, Julia? Women, we get attached, we get emotional, we think about all the people. Is that tough, being this woman making these decisions?
Of course it's tough, but it's also, if you process something and you've gone through it as a process, and obviously we spent a long time before we made the final decision to close the Oprah magazine. And, I think that was really a wonderful opportunity and experience. I mean, how many people have met Oprah? How many people have worked with her, you know, across a desk? And she was an incredible partner. But there were only two issues of Oprah around the world. And we, as South African Publishing House, had the privilege of publishing it for 12 years. Mm. But, you know, for most of that time, it was very successful. And I think, you know, it's also one of the lessons I learned from my mother is chutzpah, and it's one of our company values. Yes. And chutzpah is, if anybody doesn't know, but it's like having the cheek, you know, to assume that Oprah would want to publish a magazine with you in South Africa and not 100 million other people around the world. And when Hearst launched it, we went, we approached them, we wanted to do it, and then we kept going and kept going. And eventually, 2 years after the original launch, they let us come and present to Oprah and in New York. And I mean, that's part of my experience and, you know, learnings that I've had working in the business. And that's why we made it one of our values. So it's having the chutzpah to think that somebody will want to take your call or go into business with you.
That's a lovely lesson.
Or come work for you. Of course they will. Why wouldn't they? So yes, it was very sad. But, you know, I think we did it in the fairest and the best way that we possibly could.
But Oprah gave us another gift. She was the one who opened our eyes to the power of events.
Yeah, that's
which true. And the events we did with Oprah
phenomenal.
Were phenomenal.
Always the best, I remember. Always the best.
So, you know, that was a good, great learning for us.
Ladies, time has marched very, very fast, unfortunately. Compelling, riveting, illuminating, fascinating. I could go on and on having these two lovely women, experienced women in our studio and sharing your story. So Jane, thank you. So lovely meeting up with you again. Julia, so inspiring as well. It's been really a great conversation, and thank you for joining us. And thank you for once again tuning in. I have so enjoyed spending my time with you, and I hope you're going to join me again same time next week. Take care. Bye.
Did you miss a show or have to leave mid-conversation? No problem. Visit our website on www.conversationswithnikki.co.za and catch up on all the shows.